Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Creative Control with Vish Khanna.
Before I tell you what's happening on this episode, I'd like to congratulate my sister Anita and her partner Beth. They just had a baby girl. Ronnie, I'm an uncle. Congratulations to me and to them. They're going through the sleep deprivation, what the hell's going on kind of phase. And I am basically Uncle Public Health at the moment. I get the calls, I get the texts. It's fun. I like saying, it's going to be fine. Put the diaper on the right end. Everything will be fine. It's fun. It's fun talking to new parents after going through it a couple times myself. And yeah, congrats to them. Okay, this episode is features an interview with a very funny comedian named Cameron Esposito. And it was set up because she was scheduled to perform some makeup shows in Toronto at the Comedy Bar. She was supposed to be here earlier in the summer and couldn't make it, so they rescheduled them to this month. And unfortunately, we've just learned that she's again had to postpone these dates due to scheduling conflicts. So you're going to hear me during the proper intro mention those dates. Don't go to the Comedy Bar. They're trying to get something else together. Maybe it'll be fun. I don't know. They're still trying to figure it out. But because the conversation was sort of topical and interesting, I thought I would share it now. I'm not sure when she'll be coming back to Toronto, if she will be able to come back to Toronto, because she's got other tour dates. She is coming to Vancouver, which we discussed on the show, and you'll learn about that towards the end of the interview. Anyway, she's very funny and very thoughtful, and this is a bit of a contentious conversation at times. We talk about comedians and perceptions of comedy, perceptions of her. And I think it's good. I think it's interesting. I think you'll like it. This is myself and Cameron Esposito. This week, the Bookshelf Cinema is screening Amy, Samba, Mr. Holmes, Menu, and more. And at the E-Bar, Humans and Free and Loche play together on September 11th, and the next night, September 12th, throwback to vintage music and burlesque with Rock and Roll Rebels. The Bookshelf is an independently owned cultural hub located at 41 Quebec Street in Guelph. For more information about their hours, listings, blogs, accessibility, and directions, please visit bookshelf.ca. Cameron Esposito is a gifted and hilarious comedian and actress who originally hails from Chicago, Illinois. She's a beloved figure who reveals much about her personal life and her stand-up, often discussing the fact that she's a lesbian and covering various aspects and concerns pertaining to the LGBTQ community. In fact, her 2014 stand-up record Same Sex Symbol delved deeply into such topics and was acclaimed as one of the best and smartest comedy albums of the year. Now based in Los Angeles, Esposito is an in-demand performer who's appeared on TV shows like At Midnight, Conan, Marin, Drunk History, and she will soon be voicing a character on the Cartoon Network's We Bear Bears. This December, Esposito is marrying Rhea Butcher and taping her first special a mere 2 days apart. She's headlining 4 shows at the Comedy Bar in Toronto between September 10th and 12th. And here to discuss some of these things is Cameron Esposito. Hi, Cameron. How are you?
Wow, great intro. I sound extremely prolific. Perfect.
The job here is to make you sound like you're just, you don't sleep, really.
Well, that is an accurate statement. I try to sleep, but it's very difficult.
Yeah,
you... But with the constant planning of new things, you know?
That's the thing when you get, like, people are always like, hey, I saw you on the TV show, or I keep seeing your name. What happens is you go from a sort of small level, and then everything just, it's just coming at you left and right. You can't keep up, really.
You know, you're right. I mean, I think what I'll say is that I used to have more time to prepare for things. That feels like the biggest change is, like, I have, like, no idea what's happening. So I'm just showing up and winging it. And I'm a pretty good bullshitter. So I feel like maybe nobody even knows this, but 90% of the time I'm just like, sure, I can do this. Also, I've never done this before.
But that's the nature of the culture now. You just try things. I mean, you must find that, don't you find that when something like that goes particularly well, that's the best feeling?
Yes. I think that, well, also, I mean, that is the nature. It's what you're talking about. Everything is so... you know, it used to be that if you were stand-up, you were kind of on the road for 10 years, then you got your sitcom,
right?
Then you were on your sitcom, then you were maybe back on the road. There just were less options for work, what work could look like, places that you could be seen. You know, most stand-ups didn't become actors, most stand-ups didn't have book deals, all this other stuff. And now it's a little bit more standard that you have to be kind of... firing on all cylinders, I guess.
You have to be a bit more versatile, actually. There's just so many outlets for what you do that you need to conquer them all.
Right. And nobody's going to take it from you and then create your thing. You're kind of going to create your own thing. And the upside to that is that you get to make your own thing, which is amazing. And then the downside to that is that you can never kind of put yourself in somebody else's hands. Like I think about Jerry Seinfeld and Larry David. And that dynamic just doesn't exist anymore. That kind of brilliant writer writing for a brilliant stand-up.
Oh, right. I never thought of it that way. I mean, those were both... I mean, both of them had a bit of stand-up, obviously. They both wrote a lot. You're saying that... I mean, there's some, like, Adam McKay and Will Ferrell. Some people would say, like, Funny or Die.
Sure, I guess I mean in that Larry created Jerry's vehicle. Like, he just... made the show that Jerry was going to be in.
Right.
He saw him and he's like, here's how this would look. And he made it for him. And not that that like took pressure off Jerry. It's just really different now. I'm sure there's a whole slew of other pressures when somebody else is creating your thing.
Is it a bit more?
Now it's just like, there is no thing. No sitcom lasts for 10 years. So what are you trying to create anyway?
Is it more of a survival of the fittest at this point?
I think it's more about longevity. Even as like a younger comic, because there is no ultimate making it anymore. Not that they're like, you know, it's just that the separation became, I think, obvious a lot sooner. Just using the Seinfeld example again, like I'm sure there were people he started with that did not get the television show Seinfeld. And so then it was clear who was at the top, you know, and now there's just kind of a constant shuffle. You know, people get TV shows and movies and then they don't get those things for a while. And
yeah.
I think you learn kind of early on that it's just about sticking it out.
Do you think that even subliminally there's something to the fact that, okay, so Jerry Seinfeld, he ends the show. Jay Leno does The Tonight Show. Chris Rock finds greater success as stand-up. But those two, Leno and Seinfeld in particular, made their names as stand-ups. They got a thing, they got a vehicle, a show, but then they were very adamant that they were going to go back to stand-up. They were very adamant that stand-up wasn't a means to an end for them. It was just something they had to do. They had their shows, they made their money, but they all kind of came back to stand-up. And I feel like as they discussed that more and more, it became apparent to people that having the sitcom, particularly comedians, I think, that having the sitcom really shouldn't be the end goal. You know, having your show shouldn't be the end goal. It should be persevering and actually honing your craft as a stand-up. Did that, hearing people like that talk about that, did that impact you as a young stand-up?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're exactly right, that those are the comics that came out of the 80s comedy boom, and so those are the comics that had these opportunities for the first time, the big level opportunities I'm talking about, and you're talking about, like, becoming a stand-up who hosts The Tonight Show or becoming a stand-up who has Seinfeld, you know, created. And I do think that you're right. We saw all those things end. We saw those comics continue to do whatever they would do or not do, you know? Actually, weirdly, like two nights ago, is it two probably? Yeah, I was on a show with Jay Leno. He like stopped in to do a set. And he's somebody that I met a couple of years ago when I did my first stand-up appearance on television.
Yeah, on Craig Ferguson's show, that's right.
Yeah, he was the other guest on Craig Ferguson. And he had just announced, like, either that day or that week, he was leaving The Tonight Show. So it was all very fresh. And he came on that show, and he hung out and invited me. There ended up being, like, some banter that happened at the TV taping while I was on stage. And then I went over and sat on the couch between the two of them. People that are listening should just look it up, because it's like a crazy moment. And if you don't like Craig Ferguson or Jay Leno, I think it'll make you like Craig Ferguson or Jay Leno.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, so I ran into him. I hadn't seen him since then. And first of all, he's like the kindest man in the world. And second of all, I like got to see him do, you know, 20 minutes worth of stand-up. And it was amazing, because the whole time he was doing The Tonight Show, he would go out and do jokes, like sometimes nightly, at a club that's near where his home is. It was like kind of a best kept secret that if you just went there, you could see Jay
working out stuff and trying stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I had never seen him perform before. And it was exactly what you were talking about, where, you know, so he's like 65. I don't know when he started. Maybe he's got like, maybe he has 40 years of stand up under his belt.
Yeah. Yeah.
And just to see somebody who has never stopped for 40 years, comics have really differing views on Jay. He's a divisive person, but I was like actually laughing my head off because he was telling jokes with such savvy. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like a craftsman, you know, he's been working in the trade for 40 years. So he just, his like delivery is impeccable.
Right, kind of like the Penguin or the Joker. I feel like, or Lex Luthor. I feel like, as much as you know, you have this affinity for Jay. He has touched your life in some way, based on the Ferguson thing, and you happen to run into him again. He is a comedy villain. I don't know that he'll never not be a villain in comedy.
I think it really depends on who you talk to. I swear, after this happened, the next night I was taping something else, and I was talking to another comic who currently works on the new Late Late Show,
which is Gordon's show. Yeah.
He was talking about how, like, Jay had come by and, like, donated a bunch of time to the writer's room and, like, to James to help them get the show off the ground. Like, I think he's just a dude who was doing his job.
Yeah.
And didn't have a passion for hosting The Tonight Show in the way that, like, Conan had for creating Conan. Conan was the underdog, and it's like the underdog is actually a lot of times a great place to be.
No, and you're talking about the most recent thing, but this is a guy, and sorry, I don't want to start an argument with Jay Leno when we're talking about you.
Let's do it.
You have to remember, like, so when the Leno Letterman stuff happened, I guess I must have been 15. And so I was right in that picking your heroes maybe I was more about taking sides at that point, and you'd always kind of go with the rebel. And so when Leno engineered his way into The Tonight Show over Dave, I mean, that was the first thing. And then the Conan thing was the fact that it happened, like there was a sequel. The fact that Bill Carter had to write two books about Jay Leno. I understand. He's a very nice guy. And in a lot of ways,
I guess I think that I think what my takeaway from it is just that this is a brutal business.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people do a lot of things. On a long enough timeline, I think everybody fucks somebody over. And
right.
It just so happens that he didn't have the likability that, like, I mean, like, Letterman is, his likability to me and people that are in, like, the comedy spheres, his likability is immeasurable. I mean, he just doesn't care. He phones it in, but in a way that feels present. Like, he's amazing.
Yeah.
So, of course, if you're going to be a comic watching those two, and, you know, even without knowing the story, but, like, I guess all I'm saying is that I don't believe anything is that. I think everybody in this business has done some crazy shit.
Yeah, that's fair. It's not a good business, and that's part of the context. Sure. All right. Let's let go, Jay.
What is a good business? Who does a job that they love that wouldn't fight people off yet further along in that job?
Apparently, Costco treats its employees very well. That's what I've heard. People like working for Costco. You get the CEOs like, all have like, there's
stories
like
stories come out about like beefs between like musicians or baseball players or anything where it's a job that relies so heavily on you believing in yourself.
Right.
Like, of course you're going to have a side of you that's a dick.
Right. And it doesn't really, anyway. Yeah. I don't know enough about the guy. I mean, I've read a lot about Jay Leno,
but I'm not talking about him anymore.
Okay.
I'm talking
generally.
About
yeah, you're right. It's true. There's everyone's got a bad story. Yeah.
That I think that it's really easy to, anytime something comes up, it's really easy to focus on that. And there's just like so much we don't know.
Right. All right. No, that's fair. That's fair. Now I want to talk about you because we're supposed to talk.
No,
about...
I want to spend the whole time
deconstructing feuds, analyzing them.
Yeah. And like, you know, like, let's name other feuds.
Well, actually, I want to get to the opposite of a feud because you're getting married and taping your first special 2 days apart, which is kind of odd. It's happening this December. This December, did you consider combining the two events?
Right. Yeah, there was. Well, it's like perfect because my fiance is also a comic, Rhea, and so she totally gets that that's what I wanted to do. And, you know, a large portion of what I'm going to be talking about is going to be about the wedding. And then also some stuff about me about the wedding, you know, like just being at the point where you're getting married. And I wanted to do it like so it would be as immediate as a feeling as possible. And I wanted to do it in my hometown, which is also when we're getting married. So mm-hmm. I was like, what if I just, and she was like, just not the night before. And I was like, okay, 2 nights before it is.
Oh, so the wedding precedes the special?
No.
Oh.
The wedding is after.
The wedding. Oh, okay. The special happens, then right. You've got the wedding. Okay, interesting.
Right, because I figure then knock out the, and it's at a much bigger venue where like the special's at this, you know, much bigger venue, and then the wedding is a couple days later just at a really intimate place with just friends and family. So it's kind of perfect.
Okay. You're just stressing your... I just feel like you're stressing yourself out unnecessarily. But at the same time, it'll be exhilarating. It's just like what we talked about earlier. That's the way it is now. You just got to pretend you know what you're doing and go for it.
I don't think I have ever operated any way differently than this. Like, that to me, I know it sounds crazy to a lot of people. To me, I'm like, of course. Makes perfect sense that I would do that 100%. I can, there's not one part of me that thinks I'm unnecessarily stressing myself out.
And you're heavily involved in the wedding planning, I take it?
We hired a planner, which is amazing.
Oh, okay.
Because, I mean, we also work with her. We basically say like, yes or no. And then she makes phone calls and stuff.
Right. Okay.
But also because like, it just couldn't focus on the details of like, who does flowers? That's just like so not my personality. It's also not Rhea's personality. So that's also why it's like a great thing because somebody else is doing all the detail planning for the wedding and we're, you know, picking from their suggestions and telling them what we want. And then for the special, I'm sure it's going to be like completely hands-on. I've done everything. That's just how I work.
Yeah. No, that's fair. Do you have a sense yet of, I mean, you've probably been working on the material for the special throughout the last year or whatever. Mm-hmm. Do you have a sense of how much wedding stuff is going to be part of this? Like, do you know where this, what the form of this thing will be?
So I know there'll be a significant chunk at the beginning. But then also, the way I did that album, which really, really worked, is that I booked like a big tour leading up to it.
Right.
So, because I tend to write a lot, and I write on stage mostly, where like I'll talk about something once and then I'll refine it 82 times. And so I'm not sure how the tour is going to change the material for the special. I know what I think it is right now, but we have a tour starting in a couple weeks that will basically end right before December. So I'm curious to see how much will change or how much new stuff will get worked in there.
Right. And are you touring with Rhea?
Yeah. She opens and does like a half hour, and then I do an hour. And it's great. We've been doing that for the past about 2 years, which is also a really crazy position to put your relationship in, but it's wonderful.
It's a nice test, really. I mean, I'm sure you don't look at it that way, but it's, you know, you're with the person you love. It's great.
We've been through a lot of all the things. I think it's more, you know, because especially I do like a night in each city, not typically a lot of clubs.
Right.
And so, again, more do rock venues or theaters. So because you're spending a night in each city, if you're apart for like 2 weeks and I have been in 10 places or she's been in 10 places, the diversity of our experience has already like branched so far that so many things have happened and so many different moments. And it's really nice to have like a common memory bank.
Right.
Because we have some context for each other's lives as we're like rapidly evolving.
But then you've also got this thing where as comedians who talk about your personal lives, you're living the same thing. So it must be, are you working out material together for each other's acts?
No, we never do that. But we also decided years ago that we would never restrict each other. So there's no like dibs sort of a thing where we can both talk about the same topic, because generally we're always going to have a different angle, even if we talk about like each other or the same thing.
Right. Okay. That's interesting. Now, I've been speaking to a lot of Americans of late, and I've been asking them basically how things are going. And I'm curious in your opinion, from your perspective, Cameron, how is America?
How does it, before I answer this question, how does it seem from your end?
Pretty rough. The week we're speaking was this horrific and terrible incident where this disturbed gentleman killed people on live television. Mm-hmm. And
no, I realize now that you're saying this, like, I don't know. One thing that America is also really good at, or specifically the United States is really good at, is exporting our news cycle.
Oh, interesting.
Because, like, or maybe it's that we're terrible at importing other people's news cycles. Like, I feel like living here, I have some sense of what's going on in the world, but I also have lived other places and traveled a lot. And so I know that there are other places in the world where that are equivalent first world countries that have more context for themselves. And I think that's part of what's going on. Because I was curious as to whether you knew that happened this week. Not like I was going to quiz you or anything.
We have Twitter. We have Twitter.
Right. But I mean, maybe you don't follow the same people. I mean, Twitter is a curated experience. I mean, seriously.
That's true. No, you're right. You're right.
About stuff that happens in Canada. Because like, it's a very, we're a pretty myopic country.
Absolutely. No, I understand. We are not. I can't say we're not. We're going through an election of our own right now, and it's about the most controversial one we've had in some years, and at least in my lifetime, in terms of the
So I have no idea what you're talking about.
Right, that's fair.
That is what it is to live in the United States, because I just feel like it's not something that is imported for whatever reason. And it could be arrogance, you know, whatever it is. It could be like how much money we had in the 80s. It could be anything.
When you come to a Canadian city or you're touring outside of America, it's pretty standard for a comedian to get a local flavor, you know, and throw in a couple of local references at least in the opening. Do you do that?
Yeah, I mean, I do that kind of everywhere that I go. Just because, like, I think it's less like to rein people in, as it is fun to talk about what feels present for the people that are in the room. You know, like, I just don't believe that I like pack up all my jokes and then they always stay the same. And then I travel from city to city, just like peddling the same wares. You know, I'm as a comic, I'm just very into adapting to what's going on. So like, I love talking about how in Toronto, the name of the children's hospital is Sick Kids,
mm-hmm.
which is like the worst name for children's hospital.
It's just specific. It's just a specific name.
It seems like a terrible thing to write in that large of a font, because I'm sure there are some children that are going there for treatment that can also read at the point that they go in there.
Well, they know. Okay, the Sick Kids thing is a branding thing. It's a charitable aspect of the hospital. I agree with you. It's a little problematic.
Sick Kids is a crazy name for a hospital.
Okay, you're right.
You don't believe me. You have been living in Canada too long.
You know, it's just something I hadn't thought of. We know that if someone has gone to Sick Kids, that it's serious. So I don't. That's my only connotation with that. You're right. It's a little absurd.
I feel like it could also be called Kids Who Are On Their Way Back.
Yeah, that's the American
moving kids. You know, I think it could be called a lot of other things.
That's your American optimism, though. We don't have.
I just feel like that might be rough on a 7-year-old.
You're right. I'll make a call. We'll try to fix that.
Yeah, let him know. Take that down.
What else
I wanted to say about America or about the states that relates to this conversation is, you know, so if you think it's dire here, I just think it's crazy that we seemingly. There are so many reasons that the things that have happened in the last like year and a half, what with the Black Lives Matter movement and with the constant replay of mass shootings, like that's happening so often. There are so many reasons to feel passionately that these are terrible things. And, you know, one is because you care about other people, and two is because you care about your own safety,
yeah.
And three is because you believe racism exists because you're not somebody who is deluded, you know. And then there's like maybe 10 or 20 on the list is, I think, some need to care about international reputation,
right? Shame.
And even just because you and I know that it is fine to be seen as a bully. And it is fine to be seen as like insensitive in the moment. But on a long enough timeline, the more of a bully you are perceived as, the happier people are when you fall. I mean, it is like a high school sitcom. You know, it's like we've all seen that movie. And how we can't see ourselves in that role is nuts to me.
Are you, it sounded like you were maybe talking about Trump, Donald Trump, because I want to ask a little bit about him.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
I hesitate to just to give him more attention, but you know, the right wing is normally not particularly LGBTQ friendly, but thanks to Trump in particular, their current hot button topic seems to be immigration. And I'm curious, when do you think they'll start attacking you and your community again?
Weirdly, the American people's sentiment is no longer with the conservative right wing on that.
Yeah, I know.
And so I think it's not going to be a huge part of this election. There are going to be like fringe candidates who bring it up and talk about, because that's already happened. Mm-hmm. People talking about like working to repeal it, that kind of thing. I think that will happen. But more so what's happening right now, and I don't know how much you're hearing about this, is so yes, it's like it's racism towards people that, I mean, our general, like, weirdly, also immigration is, for some reason, connected to Latinos in our country, which
yeah.
is weird because it's not, obviously, those are not the only people who are immigrants. But when somebody says illegal, that's the code that they're that's Donald Trump using a coded word for, like, Mexicans.
Right.
And not even, you know, not even other types of Hispanic or Latino people, but just, like, Mexicans are the problem. So I feel like that is going to be huge also because Latinos are a massive voting bloc. Like that population is going to outnumber white Americans very soon. That is like our largest.
That's right.
So, non-white group. So it's crazy to think that you can go out and say those things. I just don't understand what the logic is there.
Do you think he's some kind of double agent? I'm starting to think there's no right. Because why would you alienate the population that's growing the most and potentially could swing voters your way? Why would you do that unless you were like trying to undermine the entire conservative agenda? It doesn't make any sense.
Right. So I think it's just, I feel like there was some like meeting that you and I don't know about where everybody agreed on what like the fear words were.
Uh-huh.
And then that's how everybody proceeded.
Right.
And the fear words are like illegal and Planned Parenthood and abortion right now. That's the other thing that's happening is that, and also the other thing that's wild about this happening is that like, this is all happening with this kind of Trump talking about Mexicans thing is all happening against the backlash of this epidemic in the states. It's being revealed that Black Americans are treated very differently by the police and that our police are having this huge recurring problem where Black Americans are being killed in traffic stops or showing up dead or being like, and it's being filmed. I mean, I'm sure you know about all of this as well.
Absolutely.
So
yeah.
It's also, it feels like maybe part of it is to not be talking about that. Cause I feel like it's like before Trump and the rest of these conservative politicians were talking about this, that wasn't where the national conversation on race was, even though it matters to statistically a larger population.
Yeah.
People like there are more Latino. The conversation was about Black Americans and it's a conversation I think we needed to be having. And now they're having this weird side conversation that is like useless because obviously, I mean, he's talking about like wall building and I just don't understand how anybody is taking him seriously.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's also unclear if people are taking him seriously.
Well, if you believe what's being reported as polls, then he is being taken seriously. And
but I don't know if I do.
No, and you can't, right? Why would you?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's just really, it's like very hard to tell who they're actually talking to and what those people are actually saying.
Or what the point of this is. I feel like it could be just be media injecting some, what would they deem as excitement, some kind of circus into this, what might just be a staid affair otherwise.
Right. I think maybe he's trying to, number one, sells a ton of magazines and gets a ton of clicks. And then number two, you know, he's prepping for that next big book tour.
Right. Yeah, totally.
And I think the other thing is that what has happened for, I think, as people are talking less about LGBT people, mm-hmm. women, the way that these candidates are talking about women, I mean, we're 50%, we're like 51, I think, percent of the American population.
Yeah.
And we just haven't gelled yet. Like, we don't exist as a voting bloc. But this could be the election where that changes.
Right.
Women
right.
actually gel as a voting bloc. It's wild to me that we haven't up until this point, but this could be the election that does that.
Well, it's very strange that, I mean, from what I understand, there's one, she's been, her name escapes me right now. There's one Republican candidate, basically, that is a woman that
right.
is kind of a fringe candidate. Do you remember her name? I don't remember her name.
It's like Fiorini or something like that.
That can't be right. Really?
No, I think her last name is Fiorini.
She sounds like a car. Anyway, I feel like they don't have any female candidates. I don't know if the Democratic Party necessarily do. They have Hillary. Everyone's banking on Hillary. Bernie Sanders having a big thing, which I'm intrigued by. You know, a guy making sense. There's always the guy that makes sense that does well for a while.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know what's going to happen. Here's what I want to ask you about, because I want to figure this out, how all of this applies to you and your work. Because normally a time like this, when things are sort of bleak, and I mean, I don't know when things haven't been bleak in the last 15 years, but when things are bleak, it's normally a really great time for satire and comedy. Usually that's what happens. But I think Jon Stewart leaving The Daily Show when he did, kind of throwing up his hands, really, and saying, I'm going back to, like, I mean, we all know he's going back to stand-up. That's what he's going to do. But basically, I got the sense that he's like, I can't take this anymore. And even me watching his show was getting to that point where the things I would normally laugh at are just so horrendous that I can't even laugh at them anymore. Does this stuff inform you and your work as a comedian?
That's interesting that that's your read on that. I mean, I get what you're saying. I feel like maybe it's also just like he was getting out before the next election cycle because he's exhausted and has been doing that job for a very long time.
Well, I trust that he was feeling restless and all that too, but I do think that it's been happening of late. His monologues or diatribes seem not only more pointed, they just seem like, I don't know what to do with this stuff anymore.
I don't know if that's a function of his just, I mean, like, so he started at The Daily Show in
99, I think.
99?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, like, he was at The Daily Show when 9/11 happened. You know, I mean, this isn't actually the worst time.
Well, I would, I mean, you could argue that, I mean, obviously that was a huge shift in how particularly your country viewed the world and viewed the way the world viewed it. And I think that that is certainly a marker for something. But the fact that the positive aspects that could have been gleaned from that situation haven't really been embraced. In fact, that things may have gotten worse domestically, internationally. I don't know. I obviously now we're, first it was Leno. Now we're talking about J. Stu, and it has nothing to do with you per se. But I feel like I do think that it was getting to the point of exasperation for him. Like, there's only so much you can satirize some of these things before they just. It's just they're too evil. They're too. We're not making progress. All of the jokes aren't really leading to change. And I think ultimately you want to make change.
Sure. I mean, maybe you and I have different perspectives on this, I wonder. Are you a stand-up?
No, I've delved into it a little bit, yeah. But not. No, I'm a one. You know, that's the other part of this comedy. We could have a. Probably a 3-hour conversation about this, you know, with Twitter and the leveling of the playing field. Everyone thinks they're a comedian and a photographer. And I've delved into it a little bit. Yeah, I have a little talk show that I do in Toronto as part of a festival that goes on for 5 months. So I've been trying to write jokes, do stand-up, talk about my family, talk about my kids. And it's weird. Sometimes it works. And I don't, but I leave the jokes behind. I never hone them. I never work on them again. But it's part of my being. I've been watching comedy and stand-up since I was a little kid.
Sure.
So I study it. I'm certainly a student of it. And
sure.
Probably maybe have it within me, but I don't know.
Right. No, I mean, I guess I think, like, I guess I look at that, at his leaving, and I think, like, oh, he wants to go make some more movies, or he wants to be off camera for a little while, because it's also exhausting.
Except that, did you not see the thing he did with the WWE? He was at the wrestling thing. He was at SummerSlam. He participated in like a skit, basically, and he got body slammed and hit a guy with a chair. This was like a week ago.
Okay.
So he just immediately went from The Daily Show. I didn't even know he was such a huge wrestling fan, and I've read about that.
I guess that's what I'm talking about. I don't think that actually disproves what I'm saying.
Right.
Like, so he probably worked 7 days a week for, you know, 15 years.
Yeah.
And that show happened. So I think maybe, I will say, as an American, it feels that people are as active talking about these things that you're talking about as they have ever been.
Mm-hmm.
Twitter has done a huge service of being able to allow for some coverage of things that The Daily Show used to be like. Maybe The Daily Show was the only thing that was talking about this. And now if you curate your timeline, or if you look at, you know, what's trending, or if you follow certain comics or certain personalities, people, that you're like getting a great description of what's happening, and everybody's jumping on with like their version of the joke.
Yeah. Yeah.
This particular thing. And I think things are bad, but the reason things are bad is because there's an uprising on both sides, and that will lead to something good down the line. That's my optimistic angle on it. Like, you know, for instance, the Black Lives Matter movement, what, it didn't just come from nowhere. Like, it wasn't that these things weren't happening and then they started happening.
Mm-hmm.
It was more that because people have cell phones in their pockets, they can prove something they shouldn't have to prove, which is that it still matters to be Black, like that there's still stigma and ways in which being Black in America can affect your life or even take your life. And so now we have that proof, and so we can share that. And it just actually feels like some of the things that we were talking about that have been accepted during my lifetime are not being accepted anymore.
Yeah, that's fair.
That I read into Jon Stewart's leaving The Daily Show as any sort of throwing hands up. I think, like, I mean, if he's going and doing something else, that's him having a passion that he wants to go hang out at. Like, this is exhausting. This is an exhausting job.
No, I know that, and that's why I'm curious how, because on your last record, it was a lot to do with your own personal history, and I think your, for lack of a better term, your community. You know, people who would maybe share and could relate to your existence. It was very relatable to people outside of those communities as well. I guess I'm just curious how this atmosphere impacts you personally in your work. I'm sure it does. I'm sure it's all kind of seeping in there, but does it? Do you feel like comfortable directly addressing some of the things we've been talking about from your perspective on stage?
Yeah, I've always been very kind of in the moment, talking about what's happening in the moment. What is great is that now, because I've been in comedy in general for like 15 years and then in stand-up for nine, I feel like I actually have some of the skill to talk about these things, which is really nice, because I think in the past, these are topics I would have wanted to talk about, but you have to, if you're going to talk about anything that is really charged or taboo, you have to have the chops to do it.
Right.
So yeah, I'm definitely talking about these things that we've been talking about. I just had a like set that I did about Planned Parenthood that kind of went all over the internet, and Planned Parenthood itself was sharing it.
Oh, okay.
So it's pretty great because, yeah, there's the opportunity to reach people where they are and give them some like hope that other people think like them is really massive right now.
Right. sometimes when you make your work so much about your own life or perspective or culture or sexual orientation, people expect to hear you discuss that all of the time. It's refreshing to me that you were just talking about being able to talk about, well, Planned Parenthood or things going out in the world and get that from your perspective, you know, talk about those things. But I'm curious, has your job as a comedian ever made you sick of being a lesbian? You're talking about being a lesbian all the time.
How can I respond to that? I think that I talk about my sexuality the same amount that all straight people talk about their sexuality. It's just that mine requires a little bit more context and understanding before I can get to the point where I'm just talking about it. Because in the States, this is still a relatively new viewpoint to be happy about. Like, it's still really relatively new to be just sharing your life openly.
Yeah.
You know, and so, I mean, Ellen came out and it killed her career, and then she had to come back, and now she says the word wife on daytime television, which is really amazing. But she was at a place in her career where, like, she never got a chance to tour a bunch after that, and she never got to talk about it. So, I mean, really, I guess, like, Tig Notaro has a new special out.
Yeah, yeah.
But again, she's from a very, very different generation than I am. Like, I think Tig is in her late 40s and I'm in my early 30s. And so, you know, I just started being able to talk about this because women like that, you know, broke down some walls and allowed me to be able to talk about it. So I think it's more just like, I will over time eventually have to prepare people less for what I'm talking about. Like, I'll just be able to use the word wife and nobody will be like, wait, what?
That's the goal. Yeah.
In Canada, this is different because I have recently, well, when was the last time I was there? I don't know. I was doing jokes about, you know, in America, there's still an opposing force against gay people. And I'm sure it's not like every gay person in Canada lives in this heaven where they never are opposed.
No, it's quite the opposite, actually. Yeah.
And no, I know. What I mean is, I'm sure there are still some people that have a shitty time.
Yeah.
Being gay is still being an outlier. I'm sure there are still some queer Canadians that are like up against some shit, but the idea that they're up against some shit is not widely known. Whereas like in America, it's still really wild to just be like out on stage talking about it with confidence and joy.
Right. So, I mean, this is just part of your life. You feel comfortable talking about it. It's just a natural extension of your being. I mean, this is just what you're going to talk about.
Every comic talks about their personal life
right
now. It's like the movement comedy has gone in direction. Also for me personally, it matters to talk about it because I want to be, choose to be an example of a functional, happy adult that is also going to marry a woman. Because I know that there are gay people that don't have that influence. Right. So I'm happy to talk about it. But I also think that, like, it's almost weird to me when people don't understand why I would.
Right, of course. You're right. And I wasn't questioning why. I just, it was a bit of a jokey question, I suppose.
No, I know. I'm not talking about you.
Well, I sometimes,
believe how often I get this type of a question. It is a lot.
Right, right. But even when I hear Hari Kondabulu or somebody who, when he was on the show, he talked about the fact that people now call him a racial comedian or a comedian who only talks about race. And he didn't even really have to defend it. He was just like, well, why wouldn't I talk about it? It's a huge issue. And the people who are saying that likely just don't want to address it. And so I just wonder about stigma, or I wonder about expectation. I mean, it could very well be that you end up doing a special. You don't even have to talk about it at all because it's just not relevant to you at that point in your life, right?
Well, I mean, I'm pretty sure this will be on the next special. Things are not being fixed overnight here.
Yeah.
It's also not something I'm sad about. And I also, I mean, Hari and I are friends. He and I have very different styles. I can certainly be as outspoken as Hari is, but I can also just be like, this is what's going on for me. Mm-hmm. My stuff is very personal. And so because my comedy is very personal, it's probably going to include some part of my personal life.
Absolutely. Yeah.
No. The person I happen to be is this person.
We were speaking earlier about how dynamic comedians have to be these days, and sometimes you get a book deal. You finished a book recently.
Oh my God, I didn't even finish. I'm like still writing it.
Oh man, did I just call you out? Oh man, I hope your editors aren't listening.
You didn't call me out. I'm openly telling you.
You're working on a book.
I am working on a book. I think it's going to be great. It's also like the most difficult thing because my brain is really good at working on the next thing and like moving rapidly. And so sitting statically with like one thing to do is torture for me. So wish me luck, because after we get off the phone, I'm going to go write some stuff.
Oh, really? And is there a shape? Is it a memoir? Is it some kind of novel?
Yeah, it's autobiographical essays. So I got like 7 of them done. I probably need 12. So we'll see.
Oh,
we'll
man. See. You'll get those done this afternoon.
I think I'm going to write 5 essays this afternoon. Absolutely. I've been writing this whole time.
Hopefully one of them will be inspired by this conversation somehow. Who knows? Wonder. You never know. All right. Well, is there anything else you want to tell us about what's coming up next for you? I mentioned that you're coming to Canada, and I will mention it again in a moment. But anything else that you're excited
about?
Just
come see me in Canada. That's all. I can't wait to be there. Your money has windows on it. I can't wait to look at your money.
Once again, Cameron Esposito is headlining 4 shows at the Comedy Bar in Toronto between September 10th and 12th. Are there any other Canadian dates? This is all I was told about.
No, I am going to be in... Oh, man. Now...
Oh, man, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to put you on
my schedule. No, it's totally great. Because I am also going to be... Oh, no.
I could pull up your...
I'm going to be in Vancouver.
Oh, okay.
From the 1st to the 3rd. I know that is very far away from Toronto, but hey.
It's Canada. Yeah. It's still Canada. It counts. All right. All right.
Right. So... It counts. It counts as part of Canada.
And are you at, do you know the name? Are you at the Biltmore or something? The club in Vancouver?
I'm sorry. I can't remember.
No, that's fine. Forget it. I'll put it.
Comedy Mix? Is that a thing?
Yes. I don't know. Comedy Mix. That is a thing. Okay. So.
That's where I am.
Okay. Comedy Mix in Vancouver, Comedy Bar in Toronto. Her latest album is called Same Sex Symbol. It's available now by the excellent record label Kill Rock Stars. And you can learn more at CameronEsposito.com, which I should have visited before figuring out her tour dates at the end here.
No, that's okay. That's not your job, it turns out.
Now, is there a track from your record that we can play?
Fighter Pilot.
Okay. Cameron, it was a pleasure to speak with you. Thank you for your time. And
have a wonderful day, okay?
Yeah, you too. Bye-bye.
I know there's still a lot of confusion about what gay people are. Like, that's what it is right there, right? You know, it's like that it's still that it's an insult. You guys, I am so happy with where I am in my life. Just finally my look sorted out. You know, my gender reflected to you accurately, my gender being fighter pilot. This is a new one. This is a new one. I'm wearing fighter pilot or Gavid Bowie? It took a very long time to get to this point. You know, I grew up in the suburbs of Chicago. That's right. And I didn't know I was gay, honestly. I didn't know I was gay until I was 20. Because I knew no gay people. I didn't know gay was a thing you could be. For me, where I grew up, I honestly think it would have been as difficult for me to realize I was a lesbian as it would have been for me to realize I was a leprechaun. Like, gays and leprechauns, I thought they were mythical creatures for parades! I should have known. Sometimes when people talk about gay people, they talk about needing to protect their kids. You know, like, we can't have equal marriage. We gotta protect the kids. Which confounds me, because I don't understand where they think gay adults come from. Like, there's not an easy bake oven in the sky where it's like, ding, an adult. No, like, I came out like this, you know, just ready for rugby right away. Just throw a girl over my shoulder, I'll run the ball in. Like, I've always been like this, and I wish I would have known. You should tell kids, because there are little gay kids, and they don't know what the fuck is going on. Like, I just thought all my girlfriends were like, we want our boyfriends to go home, right? So we can sleep over each other's beds and then hang out forever. Like, I thought that's how we all felt. And honestly, if you read Cosmopolitan magazine, that doesn't say it's not true. I mean, how many days a week do you guys think a suburban girl should wear a coonskin cap? Because if you said zero, I went with seven. 7 days a week, still sort of wearing one. And I wish somebody had been like, listen, David Crockett, there's a reason for all this. That would have helped me out.
There you go, from her latest stand-up record, Same Sex Symbol. That was Cameron Esposito with Fighter Pilot. I hope you enjoyed that. It's very funny. The record's very funny. For what it's worth, it was one of my top five comedy records of 2014, which I wrote up for Exclaim magazine, and it's very funny. I hope you enjoyed the track. I hope you enjoyed the conversation, and I hope you'll seek out Cameron. She's very thoughtful and very, very funny. All right, well, that's the end of the show. What was I going to tell you? Oh, if you want to stay connected to the show on Twitter, @VishCreative, on Facebook, Creative Control with Vish Khanna. You can listen to the show on iTunes. You can listen to the show on Audioboom. You can contact me at creativecontrol933@gmail.com. You can listen to the show when it streams, a version of the show, when it streams on CFRU 93.3 FM, which is based in Guelph. You can listen to it around the world at CFRU.ca. Or if you're in the Waterloo region, which is in Ontario, it's on at noon Eastern Standard Time. And as I say, 93.3 FM. If you'd like a t-shirt, you can still get some. I have some t-shirts left, two designs. Just tell me which one you want, what size, where I can ship it, and send me $20, and you get a t-shirt. I have small, medium, large, extra large. I've got some t-shirts. And you can still donate to the Patreon campaign as well, patreon.com/creativecontrol. That's it for this week. Coming up next on the show, Ani DeFranco. Very excited. Ani DeFranco's on the show, so stick around for that. Or, well, not stick around. Go do stuff and check back in later, and that's when Ani DeFranco will be on. Okay, thanks for listening.
When we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.